Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Welcome back, my kindred, to Canada by Night, a Vampire the Masquerade live play podcast. The coterie was notified that a town hall meeting was about to begin in response to a slew of murders at the hands of vampires. Everett reluctantly agreed that it was his duty to attend. Doris's tarot cards warned of great danger and a meeting of the minds. Val hated pretty much everything, and Evangeline, along with four other captives, was forced into a frenzy soon to be unleashed on an unsuspecting town hall. Find out what happens next as we return to the world of darkness.
The coterie are all traveling towards a town hall meeting. In different vehicles, not knowing that everyone is headed towards the same location and not arriving at the same time. The first group to arrive are the officers of the law, driven by Val. Everett, do you think you take the front seat, or are you sitting in the back of the squad car?
The front, I think.
Doris in the back with her pink hat with the little balls dangling from it, locked in like a prisoner. and you all arrive at the scene of DeSanti Elementary. When you look out, you can see a glowing, very corporate sign on the exterior of the school. You all enter. It's a very traditional kind of squat brick structure. You enter through the front hallway. There's a foyer with the office off to the side with the glass-walled windows. The lights are all out. However, in front of you are the tan wooden doors with the small glass with mesh built into it windows with just that cheap halogen-style lighting that you find inside school gyms. And once you enter there, you find yourself on the basketball courts. It's that rubberized floor that you'd expect. It looks like pebbles, almost as though it were curling ice. There are no nets.
Curling ice?
Yes, if you go curling. If you've ever seen they pebble the ice, it's a process. Okay. So if curling ice isn't just flat for curling. They actually have somebody walk out with like a weird hose thing because it's pebbled the whole way down so you can slide on it. You can't slide on flat ice using the shoes. In curling, you can. I curled until I was like 13. Now we've revealed that.
So I'm just totally like, necessary. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
That's a fascinating bit of trivia, though. I didn't know that about.
It has a texture similar to the gym floors that Laura already had reference for. But for those who don't, but also know curling, that's going to be everyone else. You now know facts. The walls are painted white. They're whitewashed cinder block style brick. There is a stage at the far side that has been covered. You get the feeling it's that classic 4-foot stage that's almost built sarcastically into the wall in elementary schools. But the most notable thing, despite this very simple elementary school environment, is a large circular oak table that looks as though it has been brought from a castle in the 16th century. It is finely carved. It is finely hewed. Those of you who are more vampirically linked, which would be Doris on the scale of things, you can recognize sigils and symbols woven into it in ancient languages, including Aramaic. This is a table for vampire royalty, and around it, there are
8 chairs. 4 of them have vampires standing behind them, and the other 4 are empty.
And closest to you on the way in is a throne facing the rest of the table that has been placed on a bleacher that raises it 6 inches up above the other chairs. Doris and Val, you would know that that throne is intended for the sheriff, as the sheriff is the highest authority in this area, because Cleopatra, having been assassinated but a few weeks ago, has left a power vacuum that only the sheriff can fill. There are usually 9 people on the council, which Doris and Val would be aware of. Everett, you are not.
Which is why there are 8 chairs and a throne. With the meeting having been called, having 4 of those seats empty is very strange / concerning.
I'm imagining you escort Everett to the table. Everett has no clue what's going on. So what
would
happens?
Would Doris know who used to occupy the 4?
Yes, the seating is all very formalized. The people that are missing, there's Fabienne Lacroix, who you know is currently in jail. So obviously Fabienne could not attend this meeting. There's Horatio Sundrop, who is the representative of the Malkavians, is not present. His seat is empty. One of the 2 seats that are set aside for the Gangrel, who are represented by a father-daughter combo. The father is here, Kevin Lafleur, but his daughter, Lorcan, is not present. And then Eric Francis, who is the representative of the Caitiff, the non-clan-affiliated vampires, is also not present.
Okay. Then Doris would kind of lightly touch Everett's arm and kind of gesture to the throne and just say, "That's your seat, sir. Isn't it pretty?"
"That's where I'm supposed to sit?"
"That's where the princess used to sit. So right. I hope you have big shoes."
Barty said, you know, with her gone, the sheriff is the princess.
"You're the new princess."
Right. Okay. And Everett will very uncomfortably approach the throne and take a seat.
So you have a long squeaking walk in the way that it echoes through the brick-lined room, but with the rubberized floor, you can see your boots are leaving marks as you walk, because that's what always happens in those environments. You finally sit down and the
4 vampires across from you sit down as well.
I'm going to storybook a little thing because I feel like Doris is trying to help you. So I think Doris might give you the whisper of who you are dealing with. So you have an idea of names, which will be informative for everyone.
The first of the 4 vampires before you is
Kane Raziel, a woman who is in traditional biker gear. It's Kane with a K, so it's not stepping on the vampire religious stuff. But she's got the traditional biker cut. She's wearing a lot of chains as accessories, even wrapped around the forearms. She's got a great faux hawk going. There's a bit of a Tig Notaro vibe about Kane. Clearly, you know, tough as leather and there to kick some ass.
Nice.
Kane is the representative of the Bruja clan, and Kane is the owner of Ripcord Mechanics, which is where Cherry is being looked after right now. Ripcord Mechanics is the best mechanic shop in New Haven. The next over, there is Kevin Lafleur, who is the representative of the Gangrel. Kevin is on the shorter side, a little lanky, blonde. The hair is cut close to the face, looks a little bit intellectual on the scale of things, which is surprising for those of you who know Gangrel very well, who tend to look more feral and disorganized. Kevin also has small wire-rimmed glasses that sit on his nose, and he's just wearing a button-up dress shirt and khakis. You can see over the back of his chair, a white lab coat has been thrown, Everett. So you would guess this is a medical professional of some kind. You just don't know what that is. His chair has a chair closely next to it, which is empty. And for you, Everett, everyone looks pissed off. Horatio Sundrop's seat is empty. Then there is 1010 Quarantino, the woman who is in charge of the Nosferatu of the area. 1010 is wearing the 19-year-old at a club's version of the little black dress, where it's just painted on, it's one size too small. 1010 is the stereotypical Nosferatu in the way that you would picture from the film Nosferatu. Her skin is flaking, it's exposed, she's got bald, pointed ears, the sharper, almost rat-like features. But she is out in the way that all of the Nosferatu are celebrating in terms of moving to New Haven. Everett, I think you'd pick up on this because you're aware that with the masquerade, traditional Nosferatu can't be out and about and having a great time. And they can't show skin. So this is just a land of living out loud, body positivity. Nosferatu kind of, are loving the nightlife here. Then there is Viron Farron, who is the representative of the Toreador. Viron Farron is a Tom Hiddleston in Loki type. Black hair, shoulder length. Normally, Viron, and you would see Viron on Viron's own time, be dressed in beautifully tailored suits. Just fabulous. He favors bold colors, pinks, purples, velvets, whatever wild fabric there is. But currently, Viron Farron is forced to work at a pet store because the Toreadors were not part of the original group that were invited to join New Haven. The Toreadors are here as refugees, simply known as the New Haven Pet Emporium. It's a pet store that sells only fish by an eccentric woman named Mary Lou Smethurst, who is only interested in fish as pets. She considers all other pets kind of problematic, strange, or exhausting. And for some reason, she's dressed all of her employees as though they were selling popcorn at an old-timey movie theater. So Viron Farron is wearing a elaborate smock and almost a bellhop uniform that clearly is not to Viron's liking. Viron cannot make this look entirely dignified. And there's a little hat set to the side, almost one of those flat-topped striped hats that Viron is just looking at as though it were a rat in the room. But Viron is clearly outraged. And then Fabienne Lacroix's seat is empty. So those are
the four who are present.
There's Kane Raziel, Kevin LaFleur, Tenton Quarantino, and Viron Farron, who are all staring at you, outraged. Doris and Val, you were forced to just stand behind the throne as the two classic advisors. You are able to stand up on the riser. It's a little bit awkward, but it puts you up above the rest. It is uncomfortable, but technically correct. However, everyone only has eyes for the new sheriff who has just arrived. And the first one to speak is Kevin LaFleur, who's like, I don't know where my daughter is. What did you do with my daughter? Lorcan isn't here. There's people getting murdered. Why should we let you stay as the leader of the sheriff? I think this place could be a failure.
Well, sir, is there any way for me to know their names from
yes,
where they're sitting?
I think I was saying Doris would give you the names as I was saying it, so you know who they are and who they're representing.
Well, Mr. LaFleur, have you reported your daughter a missing person with my police department?
There's been no time, says 1010 Quarantino from where 1010 is sitting. There are other people missing, and there was that attack last night. We don't know what's going on.
Yes,
you're supposed to keep us safe.
We are investigating, and we will find out what is going on here. Now, if you have information that we don't, that would greatly help the investigation. The other empty seats here, is everyone missing? Or do we know the whereabouts of any of these other people?
I don't know. They're all supposed to be here, says Kane Raziel from where she's sitting. This is all, we had a meeting planned with everybody, and instead we got this. What the fuck's going on? Yesterday, there was an assault on your facility, which you tried to cover up, and then there's a bunch of murders. Something goes on at the retirement home. We call a meeting, and half the council isn't here.
Well, I can't speak for the absences of these council members, but it does appear that the incident at the retirement home and the attack on the precinct are linked, and so the investigation is proceeding. Quite frankly, if y'all have any new pertinent information to provide us, we can collect that, but we really should be carrying on with that so that we can provide you with the safety and security that you deserve here as citizens of New Haven.
Oh, honey, says Viron Farron from where Viron is sitting. Your only job is to be able to keep track of where we are. We're the most important people here. We're the representatives of the clans. If you don't know where we're disappearing to or what's happening, and your answer is, I would like more time when half the seats are fucking empty, I don't know why we need you.
If I may.
You may.
Mr. Sheriff, hello, Viron. I like your hat.
Well, thank you. I hate it. And then he reaches out with one wrist and just knocks it off the table onto the floor.
I was going to say, if you wanted to sparkle it up, I could have given you some sparkles, but it's on the floor now, so never mind. I just want everybody to recognize the fact that Mr. Fry, our new sheriff, has just gotten into town. So I think a little slack should be cut at least for perhaps the rest of the day. I remember I had a job once as a fishmonger, and my first day, I didn't know a haddock from a carp, and someone got very mad at me, but frankly, I don't think that that was very fair of them. So I don't think that this meeting is starting off in a very fair direction, because he's very new, and he came into a very delicate situation. And so I think for the good of New Haven and the good of peace and the end of chaos, that we should all calm ourselves and let him do his job, because he really hasn't had time to yet.
But my daughter is missing. We're supposed to be the Gangrel in a safe city, but my daughter is missing.
I'm going to find your daughter. We're going to find everyone.
We're going to find everyone.
Which one of you wants to engage in this social battle? Because much like there are fistfights in vampires, there is social combat, which is where you swaying a crowd deals willpower damage instead of the traditional damage. I think, Doris, you dived in. So this will be Doris's round.
Claire's hand is up. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have like specializations in persuasion and politics. So
to be clear, I love the argument that you're making.
The floor is yours.
So you are currently arguing with Kevin LaFleur, who is the one who is so bothered that Lorcan is missing that he needs some assistance. So what skill do you think we're using during that speech? What feels right for you?
I think politics, probably.
Yep, that feels right to me. Do you think this is charisma? You're trying to win them over, to be fair, just through the power of who you are?
Yes.
Great. Let's go with that then.
All right. And I have one hunger. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... That's 5 successes.
Nice.
Great. Kevin backs down. You see Kevin get checked by the fact that you're there and the sheriff is there. And you see Kevin realize in his head that you may not have information. But at the same time, he's like, as long as you agree that we will find Lorcan and that is a priority.
Yes. Would you like to provide one of my deputies with a statement? You know, your daughter's last known location, those sorts of things.
Her coffin in our veterinary shop when the sun went down.
So last night, that's what I know. Last time that you saw her.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
And he's going to sit down a little bit awkwardly. And you see all the other vampires look at him a little embarrassed and a little judgmental. Clearly, he's taken a hit for standing up, being like, I'm the guy to be the leader. And then immediately shit the bed, sit back down and say thank you. That's how willpower damage works in these things. However, you can see 1010 Quarantino lean forwards with one hand and slam a fist on the table and say,
I may not have lost myself or the important ones, but Costas, one of my vampires, he has disappeared. There was someone else, Thomas Jerry. Thomas Jerry disappeared 2 nights ago, and we don't know where Thomas Jerry went. What information do you have about Thomas Jerry, if you will protect us all?
Thomas Jerry's familiar. Do I know that Thomas Jerry is the name of the...
The Nosferatu frenzy that you killed
when they came in the shop.
Yeah. I'm going to discreetly lean over to Val and just whisper, is this the kind of place where we can disclose what happened to Thomas Jerry? Or is there a better time and place for that?
Oh, boy.
In your experience running this town, how does this usually go down?
Well, you are the final authority on what happens when people misbehave around here.
All right. And I'll adjust my posture again and raise my voice. And I will say, Thomas Jerry was shot and killed for attacking the sheriff's precinct.
What?
Looking to get out of the ads and back to the story? Fable and Folly Plus is a new way to support the creators you love. The podcast you're listening to right now, and more than 60 others, can be heard ad-free for as little as $4 a month by visiting fableandfolly.com/plus. And now, you'll start to see Fable and Folly Network shows are offering bonus content to all existing and new supporters. Find exclusive new episodes from shows like Civilized and Realms of Peril and Glory. Fable and Folly Plus. Sign up today at fableandfolly.com/plus.
Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. It's me, Tyler Hewitt. I normally play Everett Fry, but today I'm playing the role of Guy Who Will Talk to You About Patreon. That's right, Dum Dums and Dice has a Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/dumdumdice, you can support us at a number of different levels. For example, for $25 a month, you get your name added in the special thank yous at the end of every episode. And you get to create an NPC of your own that will join the cast of Dum Dums and Dragons, or Blood and Syrup, or the Valentine Heresy in their adventures. You don't have to be bitten by a vampire to be immortalized, okay? It can be so much simpler. Patreon.com/dumdumdice, DUMBDUMBDICE. Okay? memorize it, type it, click it. The clicking part is subscribing. All right, you got this.
Why would Thomas do that? Thomas was a loyal Nosferatu.
Thomas showed a blatant disregard for my authority as sheriff.
And perhaps we should all show a blatant disregard for your authority as sheriff.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
I feel like this is going to be an Everett role, but we get a Doris assist, because I think Doris is swept in nicely. Val, I think, is just thrilled to see anyone showing off their authority.
Hell yeah. Lay it down.
Can I roll for... how would I assist if I want to roll for intimidation accidentally scary?
What I would say is we'll allow you to add your bonus for your accidentally scary to Everett's roll, because Everett is the one facing this down directly, because he's got to defend a murder. That probably falls into sheriff category as opposed to deputy category. So Everett, this could be a composure, just your ability to keep it together. Or I would allow a strength if you want to lean into the fact that you're just going to play your role that way.
I am... truly playing this more from the composure route. I'm not trying to make waves at this thing. I'm trying to get this over with so we can get on with the investigation. And so,
Do you see this as etiquette then? Do you think that's there? Do you think this is a performance of trying to play the role of stead sheriff, even though you're not necessarily that
I'm just
yet?
I'm just looking at what's available here. Honestly, I have almost nothing in any of these, but for the sake of the RP, I would say... my zero stats in persuasion over my zero stats in etiquette, just because I think I'm just basically saying like, this is what happened.
It's a straight composure roll. And then what we will do is we will allow Doris, what is your intimidation stat?
2.
You will get to add 2 dice for intimidation. We'll give you a 3rd one for Val. Val is the strong silent type. What is Val looking like as this is happening? Because Val is not the person to talk in these meetings. But
no, she is definitely like standing strong with her arms crossed. And also, as soon as she stood up on the thing, she put her sunglasses on like, do not perceive me. I am like, I'm just here as muscle, basically. And I think her reputation precedes her as far as that goes.
That's 4 successes.
10-10 almost recoils as though hit once Doris chimes in and Val gives one of those lower the sunglasses to look at somebody for a second. It puts them back up and 10-10 just settles into her chair.
Yes, use your authority to keep us safe, I guess.
Viron is livid. You get the feeling Viron was team, let's fuck this sheriff up, and everybody else is just pooping the bed right now for this attempt at that. However, at the same time this meeting is ongoing, Evangeline, you have a bag over your head. You're in the back of a moving van, manacled and shackled at the ankles and at the arms, and you're in the midst of a blood frenzy. All you can see is red. All you want is to feed. It is an endless, dark animal rage. However, you do hear the beaded figure. You would recognize the voice now as the one who had originally enchanted you and tried to interrogate you using the truth spell and then to partake in the massacres. You can hear that voice traveling among what you would assume are the other people in the vehicle. You wouldn't really get any flashes of this consciously if you were able to act on your frenzy, but you are sitting at that heightened state you can't get out of, unable to move. So there's a chance you can understand what she is saying. Can you roll me, I would say, either composure or resolve?
So just so you know, because of my clan banes, you get to choose, because I'm frenzying not by choice. So you get to choose an animal feature that I have. Mm. And you also get to reduce one of my attributes by 1 point until I'm no longer frenzying. And so that's your choice.
Okay, I am going to reduce your intelligence because I think you would shift more into your animal brain on the scale of things.
Cool.
And the animal appearance you will have is clawed fingers. Your fingers actually merge into claws. So it's the ability that you have, essentially, to pop claws, only they are out. I'm imagining you would be trying to keep it together. So do you think this would be a composure, trying to hold it together for a second, or resolve to not give in to the frenzy? One or the other plus awareness.
This is interesting. Ooh. I think it would have to be resolve. I almost wanted to say composure because it's almost like her news in front of the camera, must maintain composure. But I think it's beyond that. I think it has to be resolve. I think she's fighting it as hard as she can.
Resolve and awareness.
Okie dokie. So these are all hunger dice. That's great. Three successes.
Nice. Ooh. You can hear this through the voices, through the haze of blood, frenzy, fury, and hunger. You can overhear the words being said to, you would assume, the other people in the van. You do know that there were other victims alongside you in the warehouse. The voice is clearly repeating names to them and trying to have conversations. And when she comes over to you, you can finally clearly hear what is being said. You can almost feel her lean down. You can smell the blood in her body. You want to lash out. You want to attack. You're straining against your bonds uncontrollably. But her words are still cutting through to your mind as she reaches down and yanks off your hood. And you find yourself staring into the eyes behind the veil of beads that hangs down. And she says, "You know that sheriff of yours? Do you remember him? Don't you hunger for him? Don't you hunger for the sheriff when you see him?" You can feel her battling through the frenzy, through the eye contact, to try to control your mind and implant a trigger that will occur when you've got it visually, when you see Everett. You're getting flashes of seeing him and flashes of hunger. But you do have a chance to resist this because you have heard what is going on. And you were conscious enough to do so.
Interesting. So I do have an unswayable mind. I get to add fortitude as an extra die to resist coercion, intimidation, charm, or any other mind control.
Yes, that would add to this. So you get to do your intelligence plus resolve plus your fortitude.
Okay.
So it's just you within your frenzy as she holds your hair to force you to stare into her eyes to try to resist her control.
Okay. Do hunger dice even matter when you're frenzying?
No.
Okay.
You're as gone as can be at this point.
I was going to say, I'm like, wait a second. That's already happened.
If you get a messy successy, or somebody asked me online, I'm like, all I got is Beastie McFeasty. It's not great. We'll workshop the failure version, but that's what I have.
Okay. Well, there's no messy successy. Two successes.
Two successes is not enough.
Yeah, I thought so.
So this compulsion disappears into your mind. It has the feeling of a dream that you've just woken up from and you cannot remember it. And the hood is jammed back onto your head and you return to your frenzy. And you know from the conversations that something has happened, from what you've overheard. Can you roll me, let's say, a wits and investigation to try to put together what just happened to you? Because I think you would have a shot at trying to remember it before you sink fully back into the red haze.
Okay. Two successes.
You know it's bad, and you know it's about Everett, and you sink back into the dark and the blood rage and just strain against your bonds, howling, desperately trying to feed on something, on anything, on whatever you can get into your mouth. But the hood prevents you, cycling this rage ever higher. Meanwhile,
I'm scared.
Back in the gymnasium.
You're scared.
I'm scared.
Yeah. Back in the gymnasium, Viron Farron stands up dramatically from his seat and says, "I don't know what you're thinking here. You've talked everybody down, but we don't even know if you can do this job. So what are you going to do? Are we going to be updated? Is this going to be a secret thing? What happens when I disappear in the night and the rest of the Toriores disappear? Because New Haven is clearly a failure already."
"Well, as I understand it, everyone living and working here in New Haven does not want it to be a failure. And that means that as community leaders such as yourselves and the sheriff, myself, and my deputies, we need to cooperate and work together. Give me a chance to make this right. Matter of fact, I'd like to wrap this up so we can maximize our time of the night to do the work that needs to be done."
"So you're telling me if we give you this night, by the end of the night, you will return the missing people around this table to us alive?"
"I'm telling you that these questions are taking up more and more of my time that could be spent better. Could be spent otherwise. I would love to figure out some way to report my nightly findings to you or something like that. If I could send out an email blast or something, just let everybody know."
Doris raises her hand next to you.
And I think he sees it and is like, he's talking, but also is like, this is weird. So it's like, and Doris, go ahead. Just go ahead, Doris. You can just speak.
I just wanted to say that you are all very welcome in my attic for sporadic updates, should you wish, and the occasional ritual, if that will put your minds at ease.
Well, that sounds great. Why don't we do that then? If you need an update, you can approach Doris in her attic. She's one of my top deputies on this. She'll have all the fresh information that you folks need. But we really should adjourn here or whatever, so that we can get on with the good work for the good people in New Haven.
Can you roll me a composure and persuasion?
Yes. Persuasion is.
I'm getting everyone in my attic.
Doris has one goal.
Also, that man is still there.
I was going to say, it's like, yeah, they work around the man in the box.
I don't know if it's enough, but I am pleased that of the three dice, I got three successes.
Hey.
Unfortunately, looking at Viron Farron, who is, one could say generously, an Elysium harpy and a political animal of the Camarilla in the worst possible way, Viron slams a hand down on the desk and then gently strokes the wood in a way as though controlling the gesture, flicking his fingers away, and looks to you and says, I'm afraid we're going to need some promises before we can allow this whole thing to move onwards. So what guarantee can you give us about what you can do tonight? Otherwise, I'm afraid we're not going to be able to trust you. And you do take 2 points of superficial willpower damage, which, for those knowing, it's damage to your reputation.
Yep.
So it won't kill you in the sense of things. However, there is a risk of the sheriff's department losing the faith of the clans.
Oh.
And if they start doing their own justice, that has to be balanced.
I think because I failed the composure, there's a certain way that I want to play this in the sense that, like, I was trying to be composed. It didn't work. So Everett, I think, kind of grips the armrest of the throne and leans forward a little bit and says,
I can promise you that if these political theatrics wasting my time up here are linked to us not being able to get work done this evening, I will hold certain parties at this meeting responsible.
Val will crack her knuckles in accentuation of the end of this sentence.
All right, let's get an intimidation roll from Val just to represent, because A, I know Val's good at that, and it feels like Everett also did a good sell, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Intimidation.
Can I assist in any way? Because while my intimidation stat is empty, I do have presence, and I can add, I have daunt, which I can add my presence rating to intimidation rolls.
We'll let you roll that as well then. So that'll be your own roll, Everett. Yeah, so you'll roll just your presence, and then we'll do an intimidation from Val. And because Val cracked her knuckles, that's some physical intimidation.
Physical? Yeah. Okay.
I did my roll.
Just intimidation or?
Intimidation and probably strength. I feel like you're literally just like, I can fuck up everyone in this room.
Yeah. She strength was one to flex. Away from offering punching. Yeah. Okay.
Dice. God, I rolled bullshit. I got one out of five.
You can add another one success to that.
Oh no.
I mean, I only have one die to roll with my daunt but
yeah, that was a crappy roll.
Viron Farron does not back down at all. If you think we're going to be intimidated by your physical threats, ooh, the sheriff's strong, then you clearly do not know how this job works or how the Camarilla works. I'm a toreador. We don't fucking bend over unless we want to. And at that point, the school speakers click on and static feeds into the room. I will say, Everett, you take another point of superficial willpower damage. Both of you deputies, you also take a point of superficial damage to your willpower just because losing this confrontation is not good. However, a voice echoes through the gymnasium and just says, I told you all that you would either find the future or you would eat each other. And I have not seen you join with the children of Lilith and abandon this failed experiment. And so the prophecy is true. You will eat each other and allow me to show you the masters of the feast. And the doors to the gymnasium behind the throne kick open. and five frenzied vampires sprint into the room, getting gasps of shock and horror from those vampires around the table and from the rest of you. Evie is leading the charge, including the other missing vampires. And Evie goes straight for Everett and for his throat.
This episode of Canada by Night features the voices of Tyler Hewitt, Claire Blackwood, Del Borovic, and Laura Hamstra, alongside storyteller Ryan LaPlante. This episode was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and Canada by Night's artwork was created by Del Borovic at delborovic.com. That's D-E-L-B-O-R-O-V-I-C.com. Our theme songs are What's Really Going On Right Now by Chase Allen Willis and Traffic by Kai Engel. And our ad breaks use the tracks No Control and Cheeps by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. Canada by Night is a spin-off of the Dum Dums and Dice series Blood and Syrup. If you want to hear about what happened to Everett before he came to New Haven, look for Blood and Syrup anywhere podcasts can be found. For all things Dum Dums and Dice, including merchandise and how to join our Patreon, you can visit dumdumdice.com or find us on social media at dumdumdice. That's D-U-M-B-D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. Sleep well, my kindred. Sleep well in this world of darkness.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, the Half-Blind Prophet, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lorda Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Anna Zed, Eric Williams, Logan, Fire Unfriendly, Acrix, Cameron Ezel, Grandma Likes D&D, Austin Nut Powers Fry, Stabby Stranger, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.